Welcome back to the Life Without Limits podcast. I am your host, Yogi Roth, and I am stoked because it is Father's Day week 2016. And that's right, we are going to celebrate Father's Day week all week long. And, you know, I've said it many times, this podcast is feeding me creatively in many unique ways. And it's a really cool platform to talk about things that interest you. Being able to interview a bunch of fun people and learn what makes them tick, high, and how they live a life without limits, and they don't conform to maybe elements in life where they were told they should. But this week, we're going to dedicate it to learning about the people who helped shape and create Life in a Walk, a feature documentary that I was really fortunate enough to create and direct with an amazing team. And I wanted to bring you behind the curtain on this process. And for those of you that are not aware of this film, quick rundown is that years ago, my father was diagnosed with prostate cancer. And I did not deal with it well, let alone at all. I was that guy, some of you may relate, who was running and gunning, you know, audition to audition, job to job. I wasn't spending time with the people that mattered, specifically him. And as I got older, my friends started to lose loved ones. And my dad's health, he's doing great. It wasn't this sob story that some people had painted about this film. I just had not asked him questions that I wanted desperately to get answered. And as my friends and my peers started to lose people in their life, I made a very, very clear statement to myself that I was never going to say the sentence, "I wish I spent more time with my dad." So I literally flew home and saw him, walked in the living room. It was at my sister's place in Brooklyn on the East Coast. And I said, "Hey, let's go for a walk." And he said, "Sure, where do you want to go?" Thinking we'd go around the corner. And I gave him a plane ticket and I said, "Let's go walk the Camino de Santiago." And the Camino de Santiago, otherwise known as Santiago de Compostela, is amazing to say because it just rolls off your tongue. But it's one of the most famous pilgrimages on the planet. It's a walk through France and Spain and Portugal, and there's a variety of different routes. And for us, we wanted to take the Portuguese way. So we started in Porto in Portugal and walked all the way up through Portugal, crossed over into Spain, and ended up in Santiago. And it's this amazing walk that has tons of history to it religiously, but it's become this spiritual walk where you just get disconnected from the world. You don't have a phone, you don't have emails, you don't have any of that stuff. You don't have iTunes, right? You just have each other. And everybody's walking for a different reason. Some people are walking to connect to themselves. Some people are seeking connection to others. Some are processing love, loss, whatever it may be. And because you're out there in the middle of nowhere by yourself just walking, you know, 15 to 20 miles a day, you connect with people on a way that is very organic, on a way that maybe, you know, whoever you believe in created our planet and humans wanted us to connect. And for me, I got connected with my dad. Now, it's important to understand we always had a great relationship. It wasn't one of those relationships where father pushed son, son rebelled against father. He's always been my hero. But I just didn't ask the basic stuff. You know, how'd you meet mom? What's it like to go through heartache? What's it like to go through loss? How do you deal with celebration? And I, as a son, I needed those questions answered. And away we went every day. We went through a different decade of his life, and it was a magical experience. So this week, with Father's Day coming up at the end of the week, our film was 99 cents on iTunes. And I said, well, not only are we going to celebrate it there, because you know, people have supported it all over the world on Delta, on iTunes, on demand, etc. But I wanted to take you behind the curtain with the people who helped shape it. You're going to hear from three people today who were literally on the ground floor and then at the very end of this film that helped set it in motion, that kept it sturdy when it got a little rocky, and then, of course, help us share it with the world. I hope you really enjoy this podcast. It is one that I am so excited to share with you, as it's about a film and a simple story that changed my life. And if this simple story, maybe this podcast can be a little nudge to you to ask a question to your father, your loved ones on Father's Day, then we've done our job. But I hope you enjoy Aaron Ehrenberg, Jonathan, JJ James, Ari and Risa, the amazing PR team that we had, and learn a little bit in part one of this Father's Day special of the Life Without Limits podcast as we discuss life in a walk. Enjoy.
Let's bring in the first person who actually thought life in a walk would have a chance. So Aaron Ehrenberg, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Hi, Yogi. Hi, everybody. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, me too. I really appreciate it. I want to make sure we kind of level set from the beginning and just let people know our relationship prior to meeting. I had heard about Erin. She was one of the first people ever at Indiegogo, which is an amazing crowdfunding campaign that really, I think, at least in my opinion, Erin, started to help projects like this, projects get off the ground. From your standpoint, what was your background in the film industry? And when you first heard about this project, why did it resonate with you?
Sure. So yeah, as you said, I was one of the first employees at Indiegogo, which is the world's largest crowdfunding company, and ran business development and business affairs over there. And we went from 5 or 6 employees to 122 and really saw crowdfunding take off to, you know, and I think the reason that that happened was that it's a lot like what happened in the music industry in, you know, the early 2000s, where fans and consumers started to say, you know what, I don't want the radio or labels to tell me what I want to hear. I want to be able to drive that decision. And so one of the beautiful things, in my opinion, about crowdfunding is that it's another direct-to-consumer play where fans and really a community can say, you know what, this is the kind of content that I want made because this is what I want to consume and this is how I want to grow. And so specifically in the film vertical and my experience in film, I, after working at Indiegogo and helping drive that company forward and had a lovely experience there, I was hired by WME-IMG, which is, as a lot of you probably know, a massive talent agency and media company. And they wanted me to come on and help clients navigate the crowdfunding landscape, which was really smart of them because I think they saw that they didn't want to be like a label in the early 2000s, and they wanted, as an agency, to stay in the game, right? They wanted to be able to help their clients be successful and create content directly for their fans to consume. And so I met Yogi because he is a client of WME, and he was, you know, his point agent said, want to introduce you to Yogi. He has an idea for crowdfunding. You should sit with him and hear about it and see if it's something that can make sense. So that was our background together.
Yeah, no, that was incredibly well said. I can remember the first time that we met, and I was super anxious, nervous, curious about your experience, and then I'll share mine and see if we're in the same world.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that came through to me immediately when sitting with you was how present you are, Yogi. And when you talked about the story that you wanted to tell, you were just so clear in your intention about why you wanted to tell the story and the purpose of the story. And I'll tell you, there's a science to crowdfunding, and there's a certain formula that you can replicate time and again to, you know, get to success. However, there's an art to it that can't be taught. And when I sat with you in that room, I thought, this person has an amazing story to tell. He's so present and he has such a wonderful intention around it. And I really believe that people are going to connect with that, and there's going to be a community that really cares about this story and really wants this story to be told. And so you nailed the art of crowdfunding in a way that's really hard to do. So I was so moved by you and by your story and just really excited to kind of hold your hand through the process and help you find the community and make this possibility a reality.
Thanks. Yeah, I remember walking in that day, and you know, if you've never been to an agency, specifically one like WME, it's exactly what you'd imagine when you see like Entourage. Like it's huge. It's these huge white walls, and it's kind of intimidating, and it's this big building, and you're definitely gonna see like a celebrity when you walk around the corner here and there. And I rolled in to meet with Erin and her team, and I didn't know what I was doing. I never really understood crowdfunding outside of the obvious. And I just wanted one person, Erin, honestly, just to believe in the film that is in the film industry. Like, of course, like my buddies were into it, but we never met. You were this baller. And I was like, man, I hope she just likes it. Like, but I don't have like some amazing spiel. I just have this trailer. And I can remember showing it to you in this little corner office and just watching it. And I saw that it moved you a little bit. And I was like, okay, we got one. Like, all we need is one.
Aww.
And we'll start there. And you're right. You held my hand through the whole thing. And I'll be honest, I've rarely asked for things in life. And to ask people for money, to be blunt, was really difficult. Mm-hmm. And you made it an easy experience to feel comfortable in that world.
Aw, well, thank you. I mean, here's the thing, Yogi. I think what moved me so much about the story and moved me about your intention behind telling the story is that you have such courage to be so vulnerable. And it goes back to, I'm sure, most of the listeners have seen the TED Talk by Brené Brown, because it's one of the most consumed TED Talks out there. But, we often, when we think about courage and bravery and heroism, we think about making bold moves. And sometimes those moves, is depicted in movies and things, or sometimes even violent. But really, the biggest courage comes down to allowing yourself to be vulnerable and to exposing who you really are and creating intimacy that way through relationships. And I think at the heart of Life in a Walk is this courage. There's this, all of us have those relationships with family members or close friends, but it's especially with family members where we know we love each other, and that sort of goes, we hope it's understood, but often it goes unsaid. And we have these relationships that we take a little bit for granted in the truest sense of the word. And to press beyond that and go into an intimacy with a loved one, like you did with your dad, it takes a lot of courage, And I was really moved by that. And I thought that in telling this story through this film, you're actually presenting the world with a challenge. And it doesn't seem like a challenge at first blush, like, oh, you're going to go travel somewhere internationally. That's so great. You're going to be with your dad. What's so challenging about that? But in fact, it's challenging for all of us to create the time to, come out of our busy lives and our jobs and our day-to-day to take a trip, number one. Number two, to invite somebody that's so close with us to do something like that. And number three, to ask those questions that go beyond the superficial relationship we have with our loved ones and really get to know each other. And I think there's so much courage in that. And so I saw it as, wow, this is really something that can create a movement where you're challenging other people to choose that one person to go into greater intimacy with and really get to know them during this lifetime, because it's the biggest cliche in the world, but life is short. And I love that challenge, whether it be inviting your dad to go to a ball game and asking some questions that you'd never asked before. Or the other piece of this that I love is the juxtaposition of traveling and taking an adventure somewhere far away to a place that's unknown in order to create greater intimacy with someone who we know well, right? So there's that dichotomy to me was super interesting, and how much you can get closer with somebody by going away to a new place. I thought it's just so interesting, and I still do. And your story challenges me all the time. My dad called me yesterday. He's an attorney, and he represents 6 different school boards. And he is in the midst of a really challenging situation with a student. And I can't get into the details about it, but he wanted my sister's and my opinion. And he called me and talked me through the situation. And I thought, you know what? This is one of those moments where I can kind of put this off and go about my busy day. I have 2 small kids and, a demanding job. But this is actually one of those moments, like this is a Life in a Walk moment, where I have this amazing opportunity to talk with my dad, and how cool is it that he actually values my opinion. And we can talk this through and grow. And honestly, Yogi, the story that you told, while I think I have this amazing relationship with my parents, it's actually challenged me to have a deeper level of intimacy and really take the time to have a closer relationship with my parents. And so I thank you for that.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I hear that all the time, the vulnerable side of it. And I mean, I guess it's because I've seen it so much. I don't even think mm-hmm. that anymore, but I get notes every day that describe thanks for being vulnerable and having the courage to ask your dad these questions. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's even a big deal. But of course, because I've seen it a billion times editing it, but I do remember not only the first day we met, I remember the first dollar that came in. I remember when we hit our goal of $50,000, which still to this day blows my mind. But I want to find out your thoughts when you first actually saw it, because I was super nervous to have you watch it. And I only cared about a few opinions. It was like my parents, of course, and family, the people that were obviously intimately involved, and then people like you, Keith Sarkisian, Jim Ornstein, like people that I truly love that have been around me as an artist. And I'd like to know what you thought when you watch it. And you can be as candid as possible. I can handle it. So whatever you think.
Yeah, no, I like you, was a little jittery seeing it. I remember the first time that I watched it, and I had jitters because I believe in this film so much and believe in you so much, and I was nervous. You know, it's maybe the closest that I'll come to being a creator is helping people like you through this process. And I really loved it. I mean, I think you captured your dad's spirit so well. And that was one of the things that conveyed to me so strongly. Just your dad is hilarious. And you guys have such a great relationship. And so while we're so used to watching stuff now that's really sensationalized, whether it be pushing the envelope of, you know, kind of a provocative topic or blowing stuff up, I think our sensibilities are really not subtle these days, you know? And you brought something that was so subtle and so beautiful, and it really told the story of who your dad is. And I felt like I got to know him, you know? And then I got to meet him, and I thought, wow, I feel like I really know this person. So that was my favorite thing about the film, was just the beautiful subtlety of it and how you captured your dad and how you really turned the lens on him. And this was really a story about him, and he became just this amazing character, and he has the best one-liners and so many things that, you know, I felt that I could learn from. And as a parent, you know, I know one of the things he talks about is always being like 10 steps ahead. I think about that on a weekly basis. I'm not kidding. And it is so true. But he has a really charming, funny way of talking about things, and like the way you guys talked about women and the way he talked about his relationship with your mom. It was just all so cool, and really enjoyed it. And it's the kind of thing that you watch and you come away from it and it lives with you. It's definitely a film that I didn't watch it and just enjoy it the first time and then walk away and didn't think about it again. It definitely lived with me. It continues to challenge me in the best way with my intimate relationships. And I really enjoyed it, Yogi. I thought you did an incredible job.
All right, last two, we'll get you out of here. You answered so many of my questions in that answer, which was amazing, about how it's impacted you as a parent and obviously as a child as well. But curious, you've done this so long. I mean, you're one of the first employees at Indiegogo, clearly at an agency. I want to get to your job, your new job, in a second. But did you think that this film would have the impact that it's had? Because I kind of did. Like, I had a clear, like, clearly, I had a huge dream vision, and I imagined, you know, like, winning an Oscar someday and the world knowing about this film. But that didn't happen. But what did happen is that being heard, and notes are sent to me from all across the world every day. And I'm curious, for somebody who's done this a ton, did you think it would have a reach like that? Or do you think it'd be an above average home movie and something that kids and parents would just dig if they stumbled into it?
I absolutely thought the former. I absolutely, not to say, like, you know, it's easy to say, you know, with hindsight bias that I knew, but this is one kind of data point that will help you know how much I knew. You know, at WME, it was really up to me what projects we took on, right? I mean, because it could be from deciding to take on a crowdfunding project because we knew that it would raise over $1 million and we would get great write-ups in press, or, you know, sometimes it was just up to me to decide. It was always up to me, but sometimes the reason I decided was just I thought that this was going to create a great story and a great movement and B, a really pure use of crowdfunding. And so when I say that, I mean that there are a lot of crowdfunded projects that, let's be honest, they're just really gimmicky, right? There's an online base of support and you can talk like the fans talk and give them rewards that they're going to like, and you press all the buttons and you're going to have a big success. Not that that's easy, but it's really gimmicky. With your project, Yogi, this was telling a story that I truly believed was going to touch people and move them and create a challenge and a movement that would be not only far-reaching, but I think this will go on for a long time. You know, and people are consuming this movie now on iTunes. They're consuming it while they fly because it's offered, you know, anywhere you fly on Delta. And I think, I mean, that's pretty awesome because so much of the heart and soul of this is about travel. And I really did. I thought that that was part of the beauty of this, that a true community was going to be created and you're issuing a challenge to people to connect more deeply with those that they love. And I'm happy that it's worked out that way. And I couldn't be more proud. This is one of my, honestly, like top two proudest crowdfunding moments. And not because it, you know, it didn't raise over $1 million or anything like that, but it is continuing to drive a meaningful impact. And I'm really, really proud of that.
That's cool. That warms me up inside for sure. Well, what you're doing now is I'm not surprised. I mean, you're killing it again, but you're working for a new company called Omaze. And what I love about it is, like, it's so simple of we serve world changers, you know? And to me, just reading that, when I looked up your new gig, I was like, oh my God, this is so cool. And I've gotten to meet with one of the founders of your company who you introduced me to. And I think what you're doing is really cool. And for you, you always want to influence people. So can you give us a quick background on that and how excited you are about this new challenge?
Yeah, for sure. So honestly, I was not looking to leave WME. I had a great situation there. And funny enough, working at an agency, I also had balance with my little ones because I had set up a situation where I had great boundaries around my time. And I was able to work with people like you. It was a really good situation. So Omaze actually came to me and started to recruit me through someone with whom I had worked when I was at Indiegogo. And at first I thought, you know what, this is a great company and I had heard about them and I saw some of the great work that they were doing, but I was happy where I was. And then things really turned for me when I went to dinner with Matt Paulson and Ryan Cummins, who are the co-founders and co-CEOs, around Christmas time. They took me to dinner and we just really talked about why they started the company and what their vision was. And funny to say, this is going to sound a little bit cheesy, but I felt like they really saw me as a person. And when they talked to me about, you know, my background and, you know, I'm a licensed attorney, I practice law. I found it really not soul fulfilling and ended up being an executive director of a nonprofit in the music space. And from there went into crowdfunding. And the one thing that, you know, at an agency where I was a misfit was that I missed leveraging entertainment and celebrity to help people in need. And that's what I was doing when I ran a nonprofit out here in the music industry. And so, you know, Ryan and Matt really presented me with this opportunity to leverage celebrity and entertainment in order to help people who are in need, just plain and simple. And so I really connected with that, and I love what we're doing at Omaze. So the DNA of Omaze is in storytelling. Matt and Ryan were content creators, and they were doing great things, like they worked on the first Girl Rising and Live Earth concert and just amazing creators of content, but they felt that they really weren't driving an impact beyond awareness. So they realized that, frankly, they needed to put money in the hands of nonprofits and causes so that those nonprofits and causes could do their job and help people in need. And, you know, across the country, across the world, we all love to be entertained. We love to laugh. And Matt and Ryan love to say that laughter is the shortest distance between two people. And so all of the campaigns that we launch on Omaze
have a lead video that's super funny and uplifting, and that draws people in. And the whole mechanism of funding is you enter to win a once-in-a-lifetime experience with a celebrity. So whether it be have the best night of your life with Robert Downey Jr. in New York and grab a slice of pizza and go to Fallon with him and screen his new movie, or it is a campaign to, you know, spend time with the cast of Independence Day or be cast in the next Star Trek movie. These are crazy, like, bucket list experiences, and people enter to win. You can give up from $10 up to $50,000 for a chance to win this experience. And funny enough, most of our winners, 60% of them, in fact, have given less than $100. So it's truly democratizing a once-in-a-lifetime experience. So taking that gala model, that charity gala model, moving it online to democratize it, and then taking all of those funds raised and giving them to a nonprofit. So it's really a beautiful model. I think it's quite smart because it's a win-win-win. The talent love the experience because they're able to give back. Even studios like Paramount and Warner Brothers, we work with over and over, and they love it because they're able to actually come up with a piece of content with us that promotes a film, but also is giving back. You know, and I heard a publicist of a very big celebrity say to us, you know what, we really can't do these blockbuster movies without giving back. It just doesn't feel right. And so Omaze presents a great way to do that. And for the charity partner, of course, you know, we are their stewards and we are in service of them. We create content that often, you know, gets shared pretty virally, and we drive new donors to their project, and we raise money for them. So it's really a win-win-win, and I'm really enthusiastic about it and love what we're doing.
Yeah, that's obvious. I mean, Erin is awesome. Gosh, I mean, you can clearly tell from that simple conversation, but she was the one who said yes. And I think in life, we always just need somebody to say, yeah, you can do it. And for somebody at her level to do that for us on the first time we were doing something like this, I mean, crowdfunding was one thing, but creating a film was another. I mean, we leaned on her in many ways. So, Erin, we love you. Somebody else we love is Jonathan J.J. James. He's the co-creator of Life in a Walk, the co-founder and the production company Life Without Limits Productions, one of the smartest guys I've ever been around, one of my closest friends, and somebody in this film that we leaned on tremendously because of his experience. So you're going to really enjoy this because I think every film needs that executive, needs that person that's been through the fire a little bit, to kind of, when things get a little rocky, to make sure that they can keep the boat steady. And that is JJ through and through. Take a listen to Jonathan JJ James.
JJ, what's happening, brother?
What's up, Yokes?
Not much, man. You tell us. You just got finished with an impressive triathlon, huh?
Yeah, man. So I've been rocking this morning. It's about 3:45. So it's been a long day for me, but I just competed in the Escape from Alcatraz Triathlon, which is triathlon, run, bike, swim. So start off in the morning, get on a ferry, go out to Alcatraz, and you take a jump and swim all the way to basically the Golden Gate Bridge, and then jump on my bike, ride the hills through the Golden Gate Bridge, and then run along the beach and Crissy Field. And it's like its own little unique course for sure, but finished in just about 3 hours. It was an awesome day.
Yeah, you killed it. I mean, you absolutely dominated your age group, and 253rd out of 2,000, so I'll brag for you. That's 32nd in your age group, so pump for that. There's going to be a great image that we'll share on our social media and blog page of you and your family and friends, and you have these amazing t-shirts that support you, and I'm still pissed that I don't have one of those, so for the record, I'll let that known here on this podcast. But this whole week, as you know, is about Father's Day, and without you in this film, as an executive producer, as a co-creator, as a best friend, I don't think it gets made. But I want to give our audience just a taste of how to make a film, right? And they've heard from a variety of different people already on our team. But for you, if you were to describe your role in this film, for JJ's background, for those of you who don't know, he's done dozens and dozens of TV shows on MTV, VH1, NFL, his resume is insane. But for this, how would you describe your role on this film?
I think really for me, it was twofold. One is definitely like the business side of things and really trying to make sure all the logistics were handled for the film, from working with the crew to making sure that we had everything set for festivals and all the right paperwork and all that kind of good stuff. And that's important, but definitely not my favorite part. For me, it was just another voice through the editing process. I've been taught, you know, storytelling through the television side and really how to captivate an audience and what you need and what you don't need, and worked with some really cool people from the, you know, corporate, you know, network world to freelance producers, and really making sure, like, you know, this was Yoke's story for sure with Will. And it was such a cool thing to be a part of, because you're never going to get that chance again. But to make sure and bring in that other perspective of like what a true viewer is going to see from the outside is really what my kind of like forte and background certainly brought, I feel like, to the film.
When you heard about For the First Time, can you recall that? And was the first time we discussed it, and what you felt, what you thought, and maybe almost what you projected for the movie?
Yeah, I mean, I really thought, I had no idea what your production experience was going to be. So knowing that you were going out there, you had a crew, I was unclear from the distribution side certainly as well, like what it was going to be. But for you, that's pretty common. Like, you just kind of do your own thing and you go for it. So I was a little bit like, I don't know what's going to happen, but I was excited to see what you did, because I do support a lot of what you do. So I think it was really an unknown, to tell you the truth.
How about, you know, not the first time you saw the completed version, but the first time you saw a rough cut, what did you think? And obviously you can be as blunt as you'd like.
That your dad's an amazing human being.
Yeah.
It really was, man. You know, for people out there, we've been going to festivals and have seen it out on Delta and all that kind of good stuff. So I feel like I've probably watched this film at least 15 times. But every time there's another saying or another thought or another thing that Will says that just kind of like grabs you. And so, you know, Yogi's lucky enough to have such an amazing father that kind of like taught him these little stories. And it wasn't just like a normal thing like, you know, be strong and be a man and that kind of stuff. It was stuff like Johnny from the pickle farm and like, you know, the moss on the rock continues. I mean, I can't even remember exactly what it was, but every time I hear him, it's like just another thought in my head. I'm like, wow, this guy's just so awesome.
Yeah, he's a pretty rad guy. How about, you know, for you, you were a very public figure on this film. And, you know, for your life, I feel like you started off, you were going to be an on-air guy as a broadcaster, a host. And clearly, I still think you could do that. Then you went on the other side of the lens. But for this film, you were out front a ton, whether you were getting interviewed by different publications and outlets, clearly on the festival circuit, but then also as we screened it around the country with Gather and had special screenings. What was that like for you?
I go back to the thought that, like, if I'm ever going to do something like this, I just felt so lucky to be able to have like that opportunity, because documentaries are hard. You know, there's so many, which I love the fact that anybody can make a documentary, but the fact that it was such a story that had so much relatability, that, you know, everybody has that father that whether they've, you know, lived with them their whole lives or don't know much about them, you always get that curious thought in your head. And whether it's when you're, you know, 5 years old and you're asking your dad why the sky is blue, or like for me, when I was, you know, 33 years old, really asking my dad, like, what his job was, what was it like being in the military? Like, those are just those questions that I don't know why you don't ask when you're younger, but for whatever reason, it just kind of like finally clicked. And I think that's what this film really does, is it gives everybody, not just father, son, father, daughter, husband, wives, friends, just that chance to like ask questions to people, because you're going to learn something. And why not learn from somebody you trust and love and, you know, at least cherish to be able to teach you something?
How has this movie impacted you in a way that I wouldn't know? And I'd like to think I know pretty much everything about you.
Yeah, that's a tough one, man. I would say for me, it's definitely one of the coolest accomplishments that I feel like I've ever done. Never would I have, you know, much less when I'm 16, but even in my career, thought that I could do a documentary and I could be a part of a documentary. But seeing your passion behind it, seeing the story, you know, trying to take swings on different, you know, distribution platforms, then taking it over to Indiegogo, raising that insane amount of money from people that we don't even know to be able to support us. Like, it was just like this huge roller coaster of, you know, a year and a half, 2 years from concept to edit to getting it done to getting the right people that, you know, nothing, I know nothing is going to compare to this. There's no way that I'm going to be doing, even if, you know, I'm working with Martin Scorsese, like, it's not going to compare to, like, that first film and that first chance.
Yeah, no, I agree. Do you have a favorite story from the process, whether it was, you know, something with you in an intimate moment by yourself or a late night or editing at my house or Ed's or whatever it may be? But do you have an anecdote?
Definitely the first night with Rory at Ed's basement till 2 o'clock in the morning and like having our notes and going back and forth on whether or not we were going to put Easter Island in or no, we can go shoot pickup interview bites. Like it was like such an awesome screening because it was music, but it was also all of us together in one room really going over exactly what we thought like this film would be. And it was great because it wasn't aggressive, but it was everybody's opinion. And I felt like we had such a good like chemistry of going through like, all right, this. And Rory was awesome because he just had like the answer for everything music wise. The guy just has it in his head. He was just, like, felt like he just would spit out like 3 or 4 notes and he's like, yep, all right, cool. We'll call that music Q14, move on to the next. I'm like, all right, this guy's jamming. Okay, cool. But then even when we left, it was like 2 o'clock in the morning. And it was like, that was one of those things where it was like the hard work paid off. Yes, none of us, you know, we all worked our normal jobs. We get to Ed's at 8 or 9. His wife's there giving us beers. We're hanging out downstairs till 2 a.m. and then driving back like, holy shit, like this thing's happening. Like we have it. We really got something.
Yeah, that was a vivid night. Do you, you know, you're the only person on this crew of ours that people have heard from, specifically like the production side with, you've had the most experience, right? Ed is clearly gifted, doing a ton in TV as an editor, but as a producer, you know, you've managed lots of people, you know, budgets, you know, numbers that, you know, I can't even fathom. What about this group was unique for you? Cause it was, it was lean and mean, right? I mean, everybody on this film had never done a feature film before. But you're the guy with the most experience. So I've always been curious, but never asked, what you thought about that, because you work in the land of big budgets and a lot of people, and this was pretty much the opposite.
I mean, everybody just cared. Everybody cared so much. And again, everybody had that unique thing to be able to relate to that storyline, whether it had to be something with prostate cancer, whether it had to be something just about learning with your dad and that relationship with your dad, that I felt like everybody truly was like that team. You know what I mean? We just got so lucky to bring a group of people together that even with families, with Ed, even with, you know, Sam helping out early on and digging through the footage, like we just had such a cool team where everybody wanted to work hard and really make this thing happen no matter what.
That's cool, man. Lastly, really, did you think, because I mean, I just literally emailed you a note that I got today and I've been getting them literally every day for probably the last year and a half now from somebody, from whether it's one person or five a day. Did you think it would have the impact it would have? And this isn't like a pat on our own back, but I don't know if I did or I didn't. I don't know if I can answer that just yet, but what do you think about that?
Yeah, man, I think I did. And I think it's going to be more. I feel like these festivals that passed on has missed out, to be honest with you, because it's another chance of like, one door shuts, but we try to do something else. Like people tell us, no, we don't listen to them and we try a different way. Like that's exactly how this film is going to continue to succeed. Right. We go to one company and we think they're going to be amazing, but it goes over to Delta and now we're getting notes. If it's not Delta, it's iTunes. It's like we find other ways to get the film out there to continue to show it because it is evergreen, right? Like, it's not like it's going to be some big event. Like this film really could be there for 3 to 5 years and people are going to watch it in 5 years and still have the exact same emotion and feeling that, you know, somebody watched it at the premiere. Like it has that type of power.
Yeah. If there's one person that hasn't seen it in your life that you wished could see it, who would it be?
Whew. mother on my father's side, my Nana. She was supposed to see it, but she passed away about 3 weeks before she was going to see it in Connecticut.
What do you think she would have told you right after she watched it and the credits ended?
Well, what's so fun about people, obviously anybody who has like an older parent, like they're so confused on how we work that like, I don't know if it would have truly registered that like I was a part of it and helped build it and all that kind of good stuff. But I think being able to watch my dad and when he saw it, started crying and bawling and like putting the pieces together, I think that she just would have had that a moment of like, you know, seeing her son and seeing her grandson and like thinking about my papa, who I never really met, and understanding that relationship and that power of family that I know that I felt with her, but to see it all together as like the generations, I think would have been a really cool moment.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, hey, we'd be remiss if we didn't also give a shout out to our secret weapon, your wife, who is also our graphic
Absolutely.
Designer. Who made it all happen. Tara, much love on this one.
Absolutely. I'm going to use that nickname. I'll make sure she knows. The secret weapon.
That's no doubt. Always is. Behind every smart man like yourself, there's an even brighter woman. We both know that, man. So, JJ, you know I couldn't have done this without you, and it is a total pure team effort on every possible level. And I think this is cool for Father's Day week and beyond, but I appreciate the time, bro.
Absolutely, man. Love you, Yoke.
All right. Love you too, man. Appreciate it.
How about that? There's JJ for you, one of my closest friends, but also somebody who was so vital to this process. You know, you heard from Aaron, who kind of got it off the ground. Well, JJ was the rock. He was in that meeting, the second meeting with Aaron, right? We had that first initial one, and then we went to work, and she became a partner on this project, and he was in that, and he was with me really lockstep the rest of the way. And, you know, as a first-time filmmaker, there's, you know, you get nervous, you get scared, you don't know what you're doing, and you need somebody to talk to. And to me, JJ was that guy for me. And I can remember the first time we screened it. It was at his house, and we invited a bunch of Hollywood execs. I only knew really one person for the most part. And I was kind of intimidated, but I was also a little arrogant. I was like, man, they're going to love this film. And they went with, yeah, it's great, but here's a laundry list of things you can do. And I didn't realize that when you have a screening with other professionals in your profession, they're usually probably going to coach you up. which was clearly naive of me, and I'm a clown. But it was an amazing night because we walked out of there and I had all these notes of things we were going to change. And he goes, hey, let's take the notes for what they're worth. And where do we need to change? Let's look at the silver linings and everything. And for me, that was huge. You know, I can remember that night so vividly. And I can also remember the day that we got our PR firm. And to me, we're all trying to promote our own stuff. When you're promoting a film, sometimes you can get lucky and it can catch, but other times you need people to help you. And Ariana Swan, Risa Chapnick from Boutique Publicity, they were magical. They came from the Fox family, big studio family, and they wanted to do their own thing and create a small boutique agency. And when we partnered with them, it was magic. The energy was infectious. I knew our hands were... Our new project was in great hands, and I was really excited to learn from them, and they truly did. They took us in like family, and of course, by the end of the project, I feel like we are. So I think you'll really listen and enjoy this segment of the Life Without Limits podcast, as on Father's Day week, we continue to celebrate life in a walk, and most importantly, celebrate the people that actually allowed it to happen intricately day to day as we try to create and then eventually spread this simple story about spending time with the people you love. So... here's Ari and Risa. Enjoy.
The Life Without Limits podcast.
Hello.
Hi, Yogi.
This is awesome. I know you guys don't like doing a lot of these, but I really appreciate it.
We are more behind the scenes, but for you, we'll do anything.
Amazing. Well, first, you know, I kind of laid it off in the open of, you know, you guys were part of the, obviously, guiding the strategy, the messaging, the PR, the outreach. Really the whole front-facing aspect of this film. But if you had to describe your roles, how would you do that within this project?
I'll go first.
Go for it.
This is Risa. So the strategy in Life in a Walk was twofold. One, to build you up as a filmmaker, Yogi, since a lot of people didn't know you as a filmmaker. They knew you from the Pac-12 Network and your speaking engagements, your as an author. So that was the first thing. And the second thing was to connect with a very targeted audience of who would get your film, would understand it, would believe in it, because it's not just another movie. This is a passion project and an emotional project. So we needed to find that audience for you across the country and the world.
I love that. Thanks. Ari, how about you? I mean, what I love most about you guys is when we first met, and I love your opinion of it, because, you know, you were kind of guiding the meeting. You know, we meet outside and to set the stage, and I think we're on like Sunset or Hollywood Boulevard and, you know, the heart of Hollywood. And I've never done this before. Never really worked specifically with a PR team on a film, specifically my own. And you guys had this amazing vibe. You know, you came from big studios. You decided you wanted to do projects that you were really passionate about. And it took me about 35 seconds to figure out that I wanted to work with you guys. But and that was my perspective of the meeting. But what was yours?
I mean, I think one of the things you said that really hit it is your passion. You were super excited. Your energy and your passion for your movie and your project and your message was so compelling that for us it was a no-brainer. It was something that we wanted to be a part of, not just on a professional level, but on a personal level. And you, your energy is almost it's almost addictive in a way where you kind of feel your energy and you vibe off of it and you get excited and you start to kind of join your philosophy and join your train right from the start. So our perspective was, and I can't speak for both of us, but I think we're on the same page, is that we were excited with the idea of working with you. And something that Risa also didn't really touch upon was you were working in a new platform. Your movie was being released on theatrical on demand, which was a whole new world that isn't widely known. So that also was an opportunity for us to be familiar with theatrical on demand and also educate the media about what theatrical on demand is. And to me, it is such an amazing platform for filmmakers like you who don't have the opportunity to have your movie shown. Some places will pick up your movie and show it one time or two times in one market, and that's it. You had the opportunity to show it anywhere, wherever it was desired, and I think that is such an amazing thing, and we were excited to be a part of that.
That's cool. Curious, you know, Reese, you guys came from big studio heads. You know, you were around major, you know, movies that had budgets that clearly exceeded ours. What's it like working on a project like this when you compare it to that, and how did your strategy have to shift because you didn't have $2 million in, you know, promotion and advertising to work with?
That's right. We had to get really creative. We had to network and use our, you know, stable of media friends. And, you know, as Ari said, this was a passion project for all of us. So it wasn't a hard sell once we got everybody on the phone. You know, when you're calling from a big studio, they call you back right away. When you're calling from a small boutique agency, it's not always a quick call back. So it's a lot of pounding and knocking on doors and you know, pitching as hard as you can, because once you get those journalists on the phone, they feel your energy and they want to help where and when they can. So, you know, and obviously, you know, you don't have the advertising budget. You don't have, you know, the full marketing, you know, machine behind you. So it's definitely taking a lot of out-of-the-box thinking and creativity, and that's what Ari and I enjoy most. We don't want anything to be easy. Nothing should be easy. It's not how you learn. So this was a huge growing curve for us, you know, just from you know, a publicity perspective, but we were so proud of the work that we did with you. And we know how many people, you know, when we see the letters that people write to you, we realize how much that story connected with them, and that's what we just kept using to motivate us.
That's really cool. Curious, Ari, you know what JJ, the co-creator of this film, and I love so much, was the nickname that you guys have, Team Scrappy. I mean, you guys literally were just crazy competitors. You'd call anyone anytime. What was it, and you can be, and you always are, completely candid with me, but I think for the listeners, they'll really enjoy this. What was the feedback like? You'd call somebody, you'd pitch this project, and you'd pitch the high points of the film, or however you do that, but how hard was it? Because I don't think I think sometimes in PR, you just expect things to happen sometimes when you're the client, but the work ethic that you guys have is insane.
Well, I think to Reese's point, there was kind of no stone unturned on this because you were on such an unorthodox platform. You were opening one week in Portland and the next week in Seattle and then the next week in you know, Texas. So we kind of had to scour all the media from every aspect. So we had to look at it from a national standpoint. We had to look at it from a very focused regional standpoint. And then we also wanted to touch base with your followers from your sports world. So we really tried to have an approach of no stone unturned. Now, sometimes, and I'll be completely frank, it was a little hard of a connect, especially with the national press, because it didn't feel like a huge national overlay because you were opening in select markets and certain dates. It felt more regional. So sometimes we did have a hard time connecting with the national on this topic. They might have seen the messaging and thought it was interesting, but for their direct readers, they couldn't, or followers or watchers or whatever it may be, they couldn't find the direct correlation. So that was definitely the challenges we had. But in the regional cities, we had a lot of success because it was tangible. It was something that people could say, hey, go to, you know, your local movie theater on Thursday at 7 o'clock and you can buy tickets to see it. So that definitely made it easier. But when we did talk to people, we did have the opportunity to introduce who you are. As we said, your personality is a bit infectious. So if there were interest in something about you, they were more interested in learning about more. So it definitely, you know, and the world of PR, you're right. Some people just think it's an overnight thing, but sadly it's not. Sometimes it is a lot about relationships and it is a lot about taking the time. And one thing we said for you, that the first is always the hardest. So this was your first movie. To Reese's point, we wanted to establish you as a filmmaker, and this one is the hardest. So the next time will hopefully be a little easier because we've opened the door for you a little bit. We've introduced you into that world already, so that when your next film comes out, people have already known who you are and have accepted you as a filmmaker.
Yeah. Oh, well, I love that. So, Risa, what do you think was the biggest win when you look back on the process? You know, we had some cool articles and some great publications, but what were you really jacked about?
I mean, honestly, the feedback from your audience. That just was so inspiring to me. People connected, you know, with your message on so many different levels, whether, you know, their loved ones had passed away, whether it was literally just taking a walk around the corner and realizing that, you know, time is not worth wasting. And, you know, and you reach people all over the world, not just in each regional market, but all over the world. And it's a message that, you know, this week you sent us a note that people are still connecting. So that was the most inspiring to me personally. You know, and then I obviously from a publicity standpoint, you know, getting you on a national show like The Insider was a pretty big deal. I mean, that does not happen all the time, and millions of people got to see who you are and what your movie was about. So from a professional side, I mean, that was a big deal for us.
Yeah. How about you, Ari?
On that point, coming from a studio thing, sometimes you can get very jaded. They do come a little easy, and sometimes the filmmakers don't care. Sometimes the filmmakers expect it. And that, of course, is, you know, it's absolutely great to have, but when you're working with someone like you who's so passionate, everything meant something. Everything was a big deal, and it was very exciting. And that for us was very rewarding because we knew what we were doing was making a difference. We knew that we were not just a spoke on a wheel. We were any piece that broke brought more eyes to your movie, and that meant that we were helping you and helping your film get to a wider audience, and that was very fulfilling for us.
Yeah. Were you guys surprised that, I think I was, you know, I had a crazy vision, obviously, when we met. Like, I thought this was going to blow up from a theatrical standpoint, you know, and it did fine. It did great. And we had great support on it. But I don't think I knew the depth that this movie would cut people with. You know, I don't think I expected a Delta deal to be done. And all of a sudden I'm getting emails all across the world. I expected the Delta deal to be done per se, but I don't think I was ready for how it cut people to the core. Did you guys know that, and did you expect that after being in this industry for a while?
I mean, I've never worked on a project like this before. So No, I didn't expect it. I knew what I felt when I saw your film, but I'm an incredibly sensitive person, but it emotionally, it touched me immediately, and I knew that I loved this project, and I loved the message that it put out there. But no, in no world have I worked on a movie where it has brought that much of a reaction and a direct response from your audience. I mean, we're so removed from that in the big studio film pictured world. You know, we don't see those kind of results ever. So yeah, it absolutely shocked me, but in such a wonderful way that, you know, it really got through to people. Absolutely.
And what I loved is that people felt compelled to reach out to you. People felt the need to tell you how much your movie impacted them. And not only did they think it, they actually went and found a way to get to you, send you an email, leave you a voicemail, something that they felt that they had to let you know. And I think that is amazing because it shows that your movie resonated with them. They didn't just walk out of the theater and just keep walking. It stuck with them, and they needed you to know. And I think that's remarkable.
All right, so last question, we'll get you guys out of here. I know you got a lot going on. But what's your favorite story from our time together and or this film and the process? Because we, you know, for those that don't know, when you sign with a PR firm and you start to work together, it's not like they just call and you get a report every couple of days. Like, you're in each other's lives. I mean, you know about whatever's happening, how it's happening. And I'm curious what your two favorite memories are, and then I'll share mine.
I loved the Newport Film Festival. I loved watching you guys with the fans and the audience, and listening to your Q&A and seeing all the people really surrounding you and wanting to be with you and talk to you and touch you after the screening. It was, you know, early on in our campaign, and it was so tangible, and, you know, you guys were like rock stars there, and it was so exciting for me to see. So that, for me, that was definitely one of my most memorable moments.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of just one per se. I love seeing you guys in action. As I said, I feel like your personality, both you and JJ, have an infectious excitement that I think people pick up from. And so I like seeing you guys in action. I like seeing you guys mingling with people in the crowd. And I think that definitely brought your movie to a different level, because there was a sense of connection. People weren't just watching your film. They were actually experiencing it along with you. But I do agree. I think the thing that people don't realize is that it is almost like a family. When someone is working, someone hires you as a PR firm, the way we operate is we treat you like family. If you have a question, we want to be there. If you need help, we want to help you. We want to do whatever we can. So for me, the whole experience was wonderful. And I hope that Reese and I have the opportunity to keep working with you. And also, if there's even an iota of clients that are anything like you for future, because it really is such an enjoyable experience.
I love that. You know, my two favorite memories are, one, you know, for our theatrical campaign, we partnered with a great punk company called Gather. If you haven't worked with them, you should check them out, on-demand theatrical distribution. And you have to create this video where you're basically explaining to people how to request a screening, how to get tickets, how they can invite their friends, family, etc. And we filmed ours behind my place where I live in Venice Beach on the canals. And recently you brought your son. And to me, the number one thing I wanted to do in this movie was, number one, celebrate my dad. And then number two, to be a nudge to people to spend time with the people they care about, whether they're husbands, wives, partners, sons, daughters, I didn't care, friends, buddies. It didn't matter to me. And I don't know if I think you and your son and your family and your kids have always had an amazing relationship, I'm sure. But to see you two come and hang out, even for an hour of the process of the thousands of hours we put into this film, was at least for you, Reese, something that moved me. And it was awesome to meet your son, because he's the man. And I'm always, I think, going to imagine him at like that age with that T-shirt on, like holding like whatever he was holding as a production assistant that day. So I think for you, that moved me. And then Ari, for you, we were in San Diego and my brother was in town, and we drove down for a screening. And, you know, I got a high off of going to these screenings, and it was a blast. And you had just lost somebody in your family dear to you. And for whatever reason, the universe had us having a screening the same night. And we told the audience about your story and just a little bit, you know, not to tell everybody everything, but the resounding, it was kind of like the whole theater became one heartbeat, you know. And I think anyone, whether you watch this movie and have a good, bad, and different relationship with a parent or a child or whoever, you're moved in some way. And those are the two things I think that stand out, you know, The Hollywood Reporter and Variety and, you know, all that stuff was magical. But I think, honestly, those are the two memories with you two that stick out to me most from this experience.
On a personal level, as you said, I lost my mom while we were working with you on this project. And for me, I always think things are meant to be, things happen for a reason. And I almost feel like there was a reason that Risa and I were supposed to be working with you on this movie at the time in which my mother fell ill, because I couldn't help but think that I had to stop what I was doing to be with her when in those last moments and that last time, because I knew through what you were telling me how important it was. And I am grateful that I was a part of this experience, because I did stop and I did take the time to be with her. And I look back and I have no regrets, and there isn't anything I would have said or done differently. And I think a lot of it is because you put it in my head after seeing your movie to make sure that I didn't have those moments, that I took my own quote unquote walk with my mom before it was too late. So I thank you for making this movie, and I thank you for allowing us to be a part of the journey with you.
Well, you know, nothing but love. And for anybody out there looking to hang out with really smart people, and if you're trying to promote a project that means something to you, make sure you check them out. Boutique Publicity. It'll be in the blog post on this for sure. But Ari and Risa are two of the best in the business, over 30 years of experience in the highest of levels, and they get storytelling like only you would dream of if you're trying to put together a team. So I know it was a blessing for my dad and I and our team to have you, and I appreciate you coming on the podcast. I know you don't do a lot of it,
Yoke.
So thank you.
We love you, Yoke.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, of course. Nothing but love to you guys, and we really appreciate it.
Of course. Bye, Yogi. Have a good one. Send our love to your family.
So there it is, Ari and Risa, two special individuals. Oh, my gosh. I hope you enjoyed this. This is the first in the series of Father's Day Week. You're going to get another segment of people who helped make this film happen, and then you're getting a special treat, which I'm sure you can kind of project out at the end of the week on Father's Day. We're going to get a really cool interview. I'm really excited about that. But all in all, today on this podcast, you got some really unique perspectives, right? Aaron Ehrenberg, the first person who really said, yes, this thing could happen. Jonathan J.J. James, not only one of my closest friends, but the executive producer. And you need somebody like that who just knows the business, and somebody that was really the rock for us throughout this process. And then, of course, Ari and Risa, the PR. You've got to get your movie out there. And sometimes you get lucky and it catches like wildfire, but, you know, thankfully we had them and we had a strategy. And I hope that young filmmakers can glean some knowledge from this. The crowdfunding world is massive. The creating content world is obviously exploding by the second. And we're all trying to share our own story, whether it's on Snapchat, Instagram, Twitter, whatever. But bottom line for me, this movie continues to be something that changed my life. And I hope on Father's Day week, you get to take a look at it. Like we said off the top, really stoked. It's 99 cents on iTunes. You can check it out there. We got some great announcements coming up over the next couple months, more distribution partners, more ways you can see it. But on Father's Day week, I challenge you, as we always do in this podcast, watch it. Allow this film to take place of the awkward conversation, and I promise when it's over and the credits end, you will have a meaningful conversation with whoever you're watching it with. And if you don't, call me, and I'll give you a dollar back, I promise. I love you all. Thanks for listening to the podcast, sharing this experience, supporting our film, and of course, hopefully charging in life. I'd like to end this podcast with the same phrase every time, because I think it's so true, and this film, to me, was a great example. That the only limits that we have in life are the ones we set.